The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
It's time once more to swing wide the studio doors, blow the cobwebs off producer Pete's big bag of knobs and flanges, and unlock the slumbering Barry in the corner as we cry, "Relax, world, we're back." New season, new Football Weekly Extra. Very much like the old one, but a bit different too. Today is the Premier League, readies for action. We ask, who will battle for the wooden spoon? Who will Sir Alex find to wind out now that Fat Rafa's gone? And who will be taking the silverware? Apart from burglars on Liverpool away nights, of course. Elsewhere, Martin O'Neill, what's behind his OJS hasty exit from the Villa? Roy Hodgson, Liverpool takeover, Sven, and much, much more of that Premier League stuff. Beyond that, meantime, there's the Championship, already up and running, of course. And yes, midweek internationals. Blah, 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 England. Blah, 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 booze. Blah, 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 David Beckham. All that, plus a probably holiday-interrupting chat with El Cid in Spain in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello, world. Excited first day back at school. Banter ahoy as we welcome on board what looks like a vintage lineup. Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. Nice to see you again after your exploits in South Africa.
It was great. I loved it. That whole sort of adrenalised process of travelling around grounds and press conferences and chatting to footballers telling you not very much.
North Korean fans.
All six of them.
Yeah. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. And also here, top Lothario of letter-based love, John Ashdown. Hi, John.
Hello.
Where are you?
In the we
yay!
In between the World Cup and the start of the season, we've actually squeezed one in. It was my turn, and we went for. It was funnily enough, it was G.
I should explain that for anyone who's a bit mystified at all of this, this is John's very, very novel alphabet dating plan, which you may probably know about. John and his lovely partner are making their way through the alphabet and have reached the letter G. What was G?
We went to the Great British Beer Festival.
Of course you did.
In Earl's Court. Which
all right, then.
A lovely
great
evening.
Yeah. Right, okay. Meantime, football season. Just about to start again. The Premier League Championship already.
Sorry, James. Yep. Before we talk football, did I see you presenting darts?
You know you
Germany?
Did, Barry.
I did. Yeah, yes, yeah, indeed. Yeah. You and some top dartists and Dave Gorman.
Yeah, a big darts fan, Dave Gorman. Lovely chap as well. Actually, I'd never had the pleasure of meeting him, but he's a very interesting man. Yeah. Good. So a big shout out to all you darts fans there. I was a bit of a darts virgin. But everyone was very nice.
Apparently Phil the Power Taylor came up to you and couldn't believe it was you and gave you a big hug live on TV.
That's very much the exactly
I mean,
that's
what
the happened.
Kind of quality TV you only get on Bravo, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what, you chuckle, but...
I thought it was very good.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you. Excellent.
I didn't see it, so
right.
Can't comment.
Okay, now the football. Lewis Hill says, Q for the team, is this the most uneventful pre-season in EPL history? Is it?
Well, there haven't been a lot of signings, and obviously it was a shortened pre-season because of the World Cup.
A lot
Cup.
Of people wilking out on their clubs, though.
Exactly. And this week, we've had Martin O'Neill go. We've had Steve Coppell, just as we went to record, go. And I'm quite excited about the new season.
Tell Barry about it, because Barry, that's so fresh. Barry wasn't even across this yet.
Yeah, in the press statement, he said he just didn't have the motivation and didn't really feel ready to...
I know exactly how he feels.
But this is interesting, isn't it? What, one game into the season?
Well, he lasted 33 days at Manchester City a while ago now, and he's only been, I think, six games in total, including pre-season, only winning one, and he's decided to retire from football management for good.
So he's completely given up management. Could he not have thought of this before he signed up with Bristol City?
You'd have thought so, but sometimes you go, perhaps take it one last campaign and you realise...
One last job before retirement. It always goes wrong, doesn't it?
I haven't got that stage yet.
No, no, but I'm just thinking in the films and that, invariably.
They normally die low, so at least on this, at least this time he's only going to retire in his little six-bedroom mansion in wherever it is.
Wherever it is. Okay, not the only man. You mentioned Martin O'Neill. We'll be getting on to Villa later on. But it has been, in transfer terms... an uneventful pre-season. Of course, Billy of Hall, echoing Lewis Hill's point, he says, how does one summon up the interest for football so soon after the World Cup? Well, I think the fact that it's so wide open the Premier League this year in particular.
Yeah, I think it's probably a... Well, it's a, you could argue it's a four-horse race again, as it was.
Really?
Well, I think it's probably a four-horse race, yeah.
Which four horses are we looking at there, John?
I would say the two Manchester teams, Chelsea and Arsenal, are four contenders. City being the most interesting of the four. I was actually, before we came in, I was sort of, when you try and get these things straight in your head and you try and work out who's going to, you think who's going to do well, who's going to do badly this season, and I actually tried to write down the first 11s of the five or six top teams. And had a look at them. And I think City might just have the best first 11 of any of those top sides. I don't think they've got perhaps the squad depth they need. Certainly up front, if Adebayor and Tevez get injured for any length of time, they haven't. They've only got sort of Bellamy and Santa Cruz.
Well, they may have backup. Balotelli.
Of course they could, yeah. I mean, there's still time for things to change. But I could see them certainly breaking into the top two this year.
My issue with City, I think two things. A, I'm not convinced about Mancini. I mean, you might disagree with me, Jimbo, as a manager. No. And I think they have too many holding midfields. They have about eight of them. I mean, they've bought in Yaya Toure on roughly £200,000 a week to fill a role that, you know, De Jong also plays, Kompany also plays, Vieira also plays, Barry can play.
Vieira, who's on about £125,000 a week.
It's ridiculous. And I think, you know, I assume Mancini will play 4-3-3, but who's going to be that creative midfielder? And you need someone, I think, linking.
Right. A Stephen Ireland figure.
A Stephen Ireland figure, yeah, who won't be there.
Who won't be there. Longer, player of the season 2 years ago, and he's already on the way. Yaya Toure for £28 million and, what is it, 200, 225 or something like
well,
that?
Well, apparently it's a bit less than that, but not a lot less.
David Silva coming in, who might be a more provide more of an impact.
Yeah, I rated him very highly, and I still do, but you'd imagine it might take him a few games to get going.
Do you think Silva will be part of a front three with Tevez and Adebayor then?
I'm not convinced that Adebayor will necessarily start. I guess Tevez, Silva, and who else would you play on there?
They've got Johnson, I suppose, who you've got to squeeze in somewhere.
Among the other players coming as well, James Milner.
Well, possibly. I mean, I think Milner, he was involved in 19 of 52 of Villa's goals last season, either through assists or scoring. So he will add something. But is he the player that City need? I'm not convinced.
And as Sean alluded to there, if you can't fit all these players into one 11, and you wonder if unrest might be a problem at some stage, certainly with a few big egos there, isn't there?
I think unrest will almost certainly be a problem. Players are happy to sign their contracts for ridiculous amounts of money, like $880,000 a week or whatever, but when they're sitting on the bench week after week, they're going to get restless. There's going to be, you know, mutterings in the dressing room. And I don't rate Mancini either. So I agree that City have an excellent squad on paper, but I can see them not doing particularly well.
I don't think Mancini is a disastrous manager by any means, but I think that this is not a situation that's suited to him at all.
He's quite defensive minded, and I imagine those big games he might well play three defensive midfielders. I think if you want to win the league, you perhaps want to go for it a bit more.
All right. Well, they have spent, I think, so far, not including any money that they then blow on Milner, which the deal valued about $26 million at the moment, roughly half what the rest of the league have spent in the transfer window this summer, which is a crazy statistic. And they'll be playing Spurs this weekend in a very intriguing game, one of many intriguing opening weekend fixtures. We'll talk more about Spurs a bit later on. The buses in Manchester have the logo, it's going to be our year, emblazoned in sky blue across them. It's perhaps a bit early for them to be title challenging, but are they going to be finishing ahead of Man United?
I think they might do this season, yeah. I think they. I don't think that's necessarily a reflection on the fact that United are weakened in any way, but I think City will probably finish second behind Chelsea.
Well, I put it to you that perhaps Paul Doyle's Man United out of top four prediction was a year early, because I don't know if they're not weakened, actually. Man United.
Go on, explain.
Well, their goalkeeper is how old?
Closing in on 40, isn't he?
Right, do they have a replacement?
Well, it's Kishak, it's not bad.
He's 3 months older than he was when the season ended, and he was pretty good then.
Yeah.
As were all their players.
Well, right, so were Giggs and Scholes, but there's still no plan B for when they go.
Well, I mean, that's a little unfair. No, eight goals was great Rio during the Champions League. Okay, I think I agree with you, Ferdinand's struggling. Right. But you've got the likes of Hernandez, Macheda, Obertan, Rafael,
hey, Macheda,
Fabiado.
Who's done what in the last 18 months?
You know, but they're all young players that are going to come through at some point. Yeah. Maybe not straight away, but I don't think Giggs and Scholes and Van der Sar are past it. Admittedly, I don't think they'll play, the outfield players will play all the time.
Right.
But you can't just dismiss them as likely to finish fifth. I mean, when was the last time United finished out of the top three? They haven't done since...
Don't ask questions like that. They haven't
since the start of the Premier League, I think.
Right.
And I think people like Hernandez and Berbatov offer a bit of a plan B, because I certainly wouldn't imagine they'll both be starting. I would be surprised if either of them start particularly often.
Right.
And so you've got those two on the bench. And Hernandez has looked impressive so far.
Well, he has, but, you know, a lot of players do at the World Cup. And then I suppose they have just won the Charity Shield in impressive fashion as well. But I don't know. I just look at that list of signings and Hernandez, Smalling, £10 million on Smalling, and a fella called Bebe.
The homeless man.
Is he homeless? Why?
He was homeless.
He was reared in an orphanage and played in the Homeless World Cup.
Did he?
For Portugal.
Oh, what a heartwarming tale.
Yes.
Let's hear more.
That's pretty much all I know.
But how did he go from playing in the Homeless World Cup, which has been a bit of a curiosity and never exactly a route to, you know, stardom? Cowell.
How do you scout players for the Homeless World Cup? Do you just sort of go around looking for big issue sellers?
Who gets the home dressing room?
But then how did he go from that to, you know, professional?
That I don't know, but he did become a professional. He just signed for some Portuguese club and Carlos Queiroz recommended him to Sir Alex Ferguson, and they had to pay to get him to break his contract because he'd only been at the club a few weeks.
So
he looks quite a scary man.
If he's a former tramp, does that mean he's good in the box?
Ah, yeah.
Right. Best I could come up with it short notice. Sorry about that. All right, well, there you go. Man United. I'm just, you know, throwing it out there that perhaps, maybe not outside the top four, but I'm not sure about them as a top two team.
Well, I mean, you've got to remember in 2010, they scored more points than any other side, 42. So I wouldn't be writing them off quite yet.
All right, then. All right, Sean. How about the team that finished 1 point above them than last year, Chelsea?
See, I think you could make the same argument about Chelsea as you have about Manchester United, that a lot of their players are pushing on. John Terry is not looking...
Another former tramp.
Anything like the player he used to be. You know, he was good, not brilliant, but he was horribly exposed to the World Cup. Didn't play well in the Community Shield. And the England fans turned on him last night, albeit in slightly pantomime fashion. But I can't see him finishing the season in the Chelsea first team. I think he'd be dropped. And plus, Carvalho is gone.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of Terry's good play was down to him. And without him, Terry could be in trouble.
All right, so Paul Ruck actually tweeting in this morning, are Chelsea a weaker team after the transfer dealings? And if so, can they be called favourites? Two good reasons you gave there. Carvalho going and Terry is getting worse
and worse. Also, Drogba's getting older. He's not fit either at the moment.
He says he is fitter now than he has been for 6 years.
He's not match fit, I think. He's got rid of a hernia injury that was troubling him for years.
Well, a couple of reasons for you know, Sonny Smiles for Chelsea fans.
Essien's back. I think that's another one. I think also there's rumours about Neymar coming in from Santos. Perhaps Ramirez joining as well.
Ramirez is
the sort of defensive midfielder that played for Brazil.
Who looked impressive in the World Cup. But the issue there, some people have talked about a work permit. Others have been saying that maybe there's an ownership issue, that he's not entirely owned by the club that...
I think that's true. But I think they do need a couple of signings. As Barry says, they are getting a bit older. I guess on the flip side, they did score 103 goals last season. You know, they did win the league, so you'd be foolish to write them off. But I almost think with the top four or five teams, there's not that much to separate them at the moment.
All right, the Joe Cole, Benny Yoon thing. Liverpool presumably think they've upgraded now because we've got Joe Cole in. All right, we've lost Benny Yoon, but we've got Joe Cole in. Chelsea think, all right, we've lost Joe Cole, but we've got Benny Yoon in. Which one is right?
In a way, it works out for both teams because I think Benny Yoon's probably a better impact sub than Joe Cole, and that's probably how he's going to be used at Chelsea. And it was how Cole was used last season at Chelsea. Not that he made a great deal of impact a lot of the time. Whereas he'll be a starter at Liverpool, and maybe, you know, Benny Yoon wasn't going to be that. So, yeah, I think they're both going to be reasonably happy with it. And it'll be quite an interesting. It's quite an interesting little subplot, isn't it, for the whole season as a whole? Who wins out of those two?
Certainly will.
Ancelotti made some quite withering comments about Cole, saying that basically he was too thick to understand what was required of him, and Benny Yoon was a more intelligent player. So perhaps both managers have got what they want.
I believe he turned down an absolutely massive offer from Chelsea because it wasn't big enough, and then they promptly withdrew it. I'm not sure if that's true or not. But interesting thing about Chelsea, although they may still go out and spend silly money on somebody like Hakuna Uwera, who there was much talk of some months ago. But as things stand, and a foreign signing won't help this very much, they actually are going to have an undersized senior squad because of the Premier League's new quota arrangements. See if I can get this out before Barry's eyes glaze over. The new Premier League rules are you can only have a senior squad of 25 players. 8 of those 25 have to be players who are homegrown or have spent 3 years of their footballing formation in England.
Or Wales.
Or Wales, interestingly. And if you don't have 8 of them, then you basically can't have the other 18 senior players. So you basically have to leave that 8 players hole there.
Yeah? But you can use an unlimited number of under 21s,
that's true, yeah, which Chelsea have some terrific.
Yes.
Who did Chelsea start with? West Brom. That's interesting. Big game, very big game. I mentioned Spurs. Are we going to talk about them now? Liverpool, Arsenal. Should we do them now?
Liverpool, Arsenal,
yeah. Now, big game this weekend, of course, on Sunday. Liverpool, Arsenal. Liverpool, much optimism there, despite the continuing chaos regarding their ownership.
Well, I think last season there were a few reasons for, you know, their terrible finish. I mean, Torres played just 22 times. Gerrard had a poor season. Clearly, no one really got on with Benitez. And you could argue now with Cole, with Jovanovic, with Paulson, and also with Hodgson coming in, they should be stronger this season. And it's sort of interesting that Paddy Power have had more bets on Liverpool to win the league than any other team.
Really?
Or that may be down to some Irish people with blind loyalties to Liverpool just sticking on the only spare €10 they've got. And I hope they'll 16-1. They'll have enough to go on holiday with.
That's an astonishing outburst from you, Sean.
I'm Irish. I can say that.
No, it doesn't work like that,
doesn't it?
No.
Well, Jewish comedians can make Jewish jokes. Black comedians can make black jokes.
Yeah. All right then. What ethnic minority can I abuse then?
I don't know.
I can make bald jokes, actually, yeah, can't yeah. I? Hours of fun ahead. Yeah. Okay. We were talking about Liverpool. We're going to lose all of that, apparently. No, pretty Savitz leaving.
I'm going to get a slaughter.
I didn't find it offensive.
Right, okay.
Everyone else will.
But Liverpool, terrific 2 years ago. And then last year, it kind of all went very stagnant. So given that a lot of the players from 2 years ago are still there, Mascherano is probably... Oh, well, Xavi Alonso, of course.
I think Xavi and is a big loss.
Is Mascherano going to be a big loss? Is he going to go?
I think he will go. I mean, he spoke to reporters after the game against Republic of Ireland last night and said, look, I've got nothing against Liverpool fans. They're great. I just want to play football in a different country in my time of life, which I think is fair enough.
Sid doesn't think he will. We'll hear from Sid a bit later on. And it does look a little bit like he's burned his bridges a bit early. Barry.
Well, I read an interesting quote from Mascherano, I think towards the end of last season or in the close season even. It was quite, you know, the violins were out and he was just explaining that he lives in this gated community. His wife doesn't speak English. He has no friends. Or his only mate is, what's his name at Manchester? Tevez, who he sees now and again. And it just sounded like a really, really sad, lonely existence. So I'm not surprised he wants out. And if he can get more money, obviously, then he'll go like a bat out of hell.
Hmm. Quick prediction on Hodgson in his first season at Liverpool?
It's not very quick.
No. That's not very quick, is it?
I think through no particular fault of Hodgson's, I think they'll finish 8th, 9th, possibly
really?
Lower down the table.
I think I'll happily bet Barry that they'll finish in the top 6.
Is it the traditional season opening
time?
£20?
Okay.
So Sean posits that Liverpool are going to be in the top 6.
For £20.
And Barry, you say they're going to be no higher than 8th?
No, I'm saying they won't be in the top 6.
Not in the top 6. All right. Interesting.
I just think they're financially destroyed. They don't have very many good players, and I think Fernando Torres would have left this summer if he wasn't injured, and that he will leave probably at Christmas.
You paint a compelling picture. Read the ownership thing. Still no clearer. And David Conn writing his usual excellent piece today, and a lot of people commenting at the bottom of it saying, why on earth would anyone buy the club right now when, come October, they're going to be the property of the Royal Bank of Scotland, who will sell them off for a much cheaper price than Hicks and Gillette, probably.
Well, That's true, but the reason why you'd want to buy Liverpool, two things. One is that they still have a huge number of fans.
No, I'm not saying why would you buy them. Why would you buy them now when you have to pay off Hicks and Gillette when come October the 6th, the Royal Bank has got them?
Yeah, this is probably a bit dull for...
Well, I don't think it's
very dull, but I would say in October the 6th, Hicks and Gillette will probably have organised some refinancing deal.
Oh, right, yeah. Ooh. Right, okay, well, Liverpool anyway will have a baptism of fire, or Arsenal will, one of the two, this Sunday when the Gunners visit Anfield. I mean, basically, the Arsenal story is they haven't bought a keeper.
It's the same old story. They need a goalkeeper, and they need a centre-half. I know they've bought Laurent Koscielny, I don't know how to pronounce that.
Koscielny
from Lorient. But I mean, I think it was interesting, they played Legia Warsaw last week. They won 6-5. Fabianski played the first half. According to Ars blog, Legia Warsaw stuck three players on him for every corner, and he flapped like a big flappy duck having his first swim, and he was useless. But he's likely to start this week. The other problem I think Arsenal have got against Liverpool is it looks like Van Persie and Fabregas aren't completely match fit. And they've also got injury worries.
Van Persie not entirely match fit.
And Diaby, Son and Dinelson are also apparently.
Right.
But it might sound counterintuitive, even though I think they could easily lose on Sunday, it wouldn't shock me if they actually made a decent run for the league this season. I think Nasri's been excellent in pre-season. I think Fabregas, if he stays fit, and Van Persie, if he stays fit, I think Arsenal will have a good team. You've got to remember, they were only 2 points behind Chelsea after 31 games last season.
Mm.
And they sort of failed. And I think if Wenger can buy a keeper, they will come close.
There's a lot of talk that Schwarzer might be moving across from Fulham. They have brought in Marouane Chamakh on a free from Bordeaux. A lot of excitement about that. Having said that, he's never scored more than, I think, 13 goals in a season. So he's not exactly a big scoring player.
But at least he offers a different option that isn't Nicholas Bentner.
Yeah.
Which is quite crucial, I think, for many people. And I think there'll be some great needle at the game at the weekend, because a lot of Arsenal fans are very annoyed, furious, in fact, with Pepe Reina's role in the whole putting the Barcelona shirt over Fabregas's head. And we'll certainly be giving him some stick at the weekend.
Mm, magnificent. All right. Well, romping then through the kind of top eight, as we see them, you got Spurs and Aston Villa. Spurs, first of all, who actually cracked the top four. I was talking to a Spurs fan on the way in this morning, actually, and he was saying he just doesn't know how this season's going to go. But I think there's probably a lot of causes for pessimism, not because Spurs are worse than they were last year, although, you know, there are still all those problems at the back, but because maybe that convergence of conditions, Liverpool having such a disastrous time, although you think that's going to happen again, Barry, and Manchester City not quite being ready for the push on into the top four, maybe that's not going to be the same this time around.
Possibly, though. I guess a counter-argument would be that the likes of Jenas, O'Hara, Pavlichenko, Keane, Asarakoto, Kabul, Bassong could all be on the bench, which suggests they have a pretty decent first team. Well, certainly it's the first team that, you know, that shouldn't be, shouldn't be fearful about the season ahead.
But you could also say that those players wouldn't get in any of the other... They'd be, if they were in the squads of Arsenal or City, they would be on the bench for them as well. There's nobody there that you'd say, oh, you'd definitely be in one of the other top four sides. It's been weird. It's been a quite weird summer, because Redknapp is always prepared to talk about his transfer targets, and so you expect to have this flurry of signings, and it's been quite quiet, really.
Yeah. Sandro Ranieri from Internacional. I'm not sure. Is that the Brazilian one? I'm not familiar with it at all. He's a defensive midfielder, which is always handy.
Well, they've got Wilson Palacios in there. Yeah. He's actually quite important. When he was out last season, I think they struggled a little bit. He's been keen to bring in, Redknapp's been keen to bring in a bit more experience, which is why he's after the likes of Parker and Bellamy, and has been slightly frustrated there. But I think it's... And he was saying that Ledley King is only going to be able to play league games or Champions League games. He won't be able to do both. So the squad's going to be slightly stretched by that, if they get in the Champions League.
Is Stephen Ireland going to Spurs or Villa?
Well, I heard Villa, but... I was just on the jungle drums, nothing.
He'd be an interesting signing, although not necessarily the player they need at Spurs.
I'd say any club would be glad to have Stephen Ireland, apart from the one he's at.
Bizarrely. Obviously a noted Tottenham admirer. Barry, how do you feel they're going to do this year?
I think if they qualify for the Champions League group stages, they'll probably take their eye off the ball in the league, and if they don't, then... Yeah, I can't see them cracking the top three.
It's probably fair to say that if they do qualify and their playoff is against the Young Boys of Bern, they will then go out and make one or two signings once that, you know, Champions League income is guaranteed, which obviously alters the whole paradigm, Spurs speaking.
I note with interest that Harry Redknapp is already sort of getting his excuses in early, saying that if you want to progress, you have to make these signings, but he hasn't made them yet. So, but that's sort of typical Harry speak.
Spurs, Well, Aston Villa, eh? What's the story there? 5 days before the start of the season, Martin O'Neill walks out. Why?
Well, he obviously had a disagreement with his owner / chairman, Randy Lerner, over money. Lerner isn't prepared to keep pumping in money into the club. O'Neill, apparently, and I don't know this for definite, seemed to have a fairly cavalier attitude towards the wage bill at Villa, which was 85% of their income. And you just can't operate a club like that and not make ridiculous amounts of losses. So he walked, and presumably the fact that Milner's going and Ashley Young is probably going to leave as well had a lot to do with it, because they're basically become a feeder club.
How bad do you think it's going to get? You mentioned the Ashley Young talk there, and I said before, Stephen Ireland apparently now reconsidering whether he wants to be part of the Milner deal and looking at alternatives, which include Spurs. It does look like the wheels are coming off the Villa wagon.
And with Sven-Göran Eriksson being linked, I think it's full steam ahoy.
Yeah, you wonder if last season was sort of the high watermark of this sort of era of Villa, particularly because they did spend, you know, decent chunks of money on a few players last summer. And they haven't really done that this season. And they're just, you don't get the sense that they're a club moving forward anymore.
From Lerner's point of view as well, it's perhaps a question of timing, in that when he came into Villa, it looked like by spending 80 million or whatever it is that O'Neill spent, you could actually step up a level or two in the Premier League. But the whole thing's just shifted on with
Man City have moved the goalposts, haven't they, a bit?
Okay. Well, finally, Everton, who finished eighth last year. Remember, they had that disastrous start after Julian Lescott left at the last minute, laughing perhaps on his way. I don't know.
Well, I bet he was.
Yeah, probably. And then after that, they rallied the ship, as you do, and they only lost two of their last 24 fixtures, I believe. So are they going to crack on in similar form, you know, with Arteta staying on board and perhaps Stephen Pienaar sticking around as well? Are they going to be the surprise of this season up at the top?
They could be, yeah. Injuries permitting, that's always the thing with Everton. The squad is a little thin, and it's got thinner with the loss of Dan Gosling as well, who was a useful squad player there. I think they've got a great sort of first 14 or something along those lines. And I think they were, as you were saying, the third best team in the Premier League after the turn of the year, behind Man United and Chelsea. Mm. So, yeah, if they can maintain that. But they've never been able to do it for a whole season.
Jermaine Beckford?
Yeah. I'm not convinced that he'll cut it in the top level. I think the Championship might have been a better level for him. But yeah, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before.
All right, okay. Very good. Well, plenty more to talk about on a Premier League theme. The likes of Fulham, for example, and of course the rip-roaring relegation battle. Another touch of music, and then we'll be on to that. Best of the rest time. Now, I was about to launch into a kind of relegation chat and say, maybe we should talk about Fulham first. Sean Ingle says, no, they could be in that relegation battle. Why, Sean? Why?
Well, I don't think they will be. I think there are other teams that have finished higher up. But I'm not convinced Mark Hughes is a great manager. And if they were to lose Schwarzer and perhaps had one or two injuries, you know, I don't think they'll do as well as they have done under Hodgson.
Last year, a quartet of teams, Wigan, West Ham, Wolves and Bolton, all managed to stay up despite not getting the magic 40 points, you know, which usually guarantees safety, which suggests it wasn't a particularly heated battle against the drop last time. But am I right in thinking that it's actually going to be a lot tougher to stay up this time around?
I would say no.
Oh.
I just think the three teams coming up are fairly weak, really, this year. In terms of although they, you know, West Brom and Newcastle romped the Championship automatic places last season, I just don't see that those three. I think they've got a lot of catching up to do with those teams at the bottom of that finished 17th and above last season.
Newcastle, for example, apart from the fact that Alan Shearer is not their manager, they actually look a worse team than when they went down, probably.
Well, I don't think they're any better.
Yeah.
Have they bought anybody over the summer? Oh, they've got Gosling. And they've got a lad called Perch, who wasn't stellar for Nottingham Forest. I don't think Forest fans were too disappointed to see him go. West Brom, what they needed to do and what they always need to do is buy a couple of strikers for £6-7 million each who are going to score the goals. And they just won't do it, so they will go back down again. And Blackpool, they just look like they're not really prepared.
Ooh, Blackpool's a rotten start they're having.
Didn't you say much the same about them last season? Blackpool.
Oh, that's true, actually. Yeah,
so my view on Blackpool should probably not be taken into
account.
Well,
it was such a party atmosphere in the playoffs, and you know, full of joy and team spirit, etc. But it looks like the hangover's already well underway.
Well, I think so much depends on Blackpool on Charlie Adam. You know, he scored 16 goals from midfield last season. And you look at the rest of the team, many of them Premier League class, probably not. At this point last year, I made the point that Burnley had gone up, having conceded one of the worst defensive records in the Championship, and Blackpool's the same. They conceded more goals than Crystal Palace did last season, for instance. And I think it's very unlikely they'll stay up.
All right, Marlon Harewood's just joined.
Says a lot, doesn't it, really? They only just beat Huddersfield to his signing.
Yeah. There's been a lot of unrest as well. The players who haven't received their promotion bonuses. There was this rumour that Ian Holloway was considering walking out over lack of funds for transfers.
They have got those bonuses now.
They have now.
Yeah, and the chairman said, look, we got our first chunk of Sky money the other day, so we gave them their bonuses. And he made the point, I think a lot of them were expected to be handed a big bag of money as they walked off the pitch at Wembley, which is, you know, kind of understandable from his point of view rather than theirs.
Yeah. And what about the fact that they're still rebuilding they're building a new stand and etc., so they won't have any home games at the start of the season?
Well, that's obviously going to help. You want to make a good start. Burnley last season, they beat United in their second game, I think. And it's going to be hard if they, you know, play their first four games away.
All right, John reckons it's going to be the three coming up who are the most likely to go down. Is that right?
I think probably, yeah.
Is there another team? Would you go for the same three, or do you think a West Ham or Wigan?
I think Birmingham interests me because they only conceded 13 goals at home last season. They won 13 matches 1-0, but they haven't got Joe Hart anymore. Mm. They only won one of their last 10. I don't rate Zizic at all. And it wouldn't need a lot to change for them to be, you know, thrown into a relegation battle. Wolves, you could argue, aren't a great side either. Barry's nodding his head.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But these two sides have actually spent some money, actually. Birmingham have spent about 15 million. Wolves have spent quite a bit as well.
Yeah, they have, but they've, you know, the centre forward they got from Burnley didn't score many goals last season, did he?
No, he didn't, but he missed it. I think he's one of those players that it's Stephen Fletcher who we're talking about. His movement's fantastic, and he gets himself into wonderful positions, but he did miss chance after chance. Well, almost every chance he got for Burnley, he seemed to miss. If he could find a finishing touch somewhere, he'd be brilliant.
I guess West Ham are interesting. I thought they got a really tough start. They play Villa, Bolton, United, Chelsea, Stoke and Spurs. But I thought they would lose one at least of Cole, Parker or Green. And it looks like they're going to keep them. So I'd imagine they'd be all right.
All right. Avram Grant, of course, coming in there replacing Gianfranco Zola. Not a fan, no? Really? Okay.
Oh, the relegation. Should we mention Sunderland in the relegation?
Mention away.
I don't think so. But you obviously
No, I just think, you know, having lost Lorik Kahner and brought in Danny
Welbeck. Kenwyn Jones as well.
Yeah, and replaced him with Danny Welbeck, who...
Has that gone through now?
Yeah, I think...
I don't think Kenwyn Jones is any loss. Good luck. See you, you know...
Is he not a valuable part of the Kenwyn Jones-Darren Bent tandem? No?
No, he impressed, like, one game in four, maybe, but he never delivered the goods consistently.
Whereas Danny Welbeck impresses him one in 30... How many...
I just think Sunderland are way too good to go down, famous last words, but not good enough to knock on the door for Europe. They probably finish somewhere around where they did last year, maybe a bit, you know, bit better, 10th, 11th.
All right. And they brought in Titus Bramble.
They brought in Titus Bramble, who apparently has played very well in pre-season.
And
they've brought in a couple of Fancy Dan South Americans and a Belgian goalkeeper who's supposed to be quite good.
Sounds like they're more than ready for a season in the Premier League. Very good. Well, of course, so what they're all trying to avoid, that lot, is the Championship, and it's already up and running this season. Quick bit of music, and then, John Ashton, you're up.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
John, the Championship. Imagine you were talking to somebody who really didn't know much about the Championship. What would you tell him?
I'd say it was the league to watch this season.
Really? But it's, you always say it's
I
the
do,
league
but
to
it's
watch.
Just so ridiculously unpredictable. You know, last week or before the weekend's fixtures, obviously people were doing their previews and pointing out how unpredictable it was. Mm. And then the first weekend of the season, you had Scunthorpe winning away at Reading, Middlesbrough losing at home to Ipswich, Millwall going to Bristol City. Steve Coppell's
so Ipswich
Bristol
started
City.
Off with a win this time.
Yeah.
Roy Keane's still there?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And it was just, yeah, it was just immediate sort of carnage from the off. It was a really fantastic weekend of results.
All right, Millwall started with a win.
Yeah, they went away at Bristol City.
Yep.
You know, all the teams I tipped to struggle seemed to win. All the teams that I thought were going to run away with it lost.
Crystal Palace still exist.
Yeah, Crystal Palace still exist, yeah.
Right, and what happened there?
Well, they've got... some, I think it was a fans group who took them out of there, CPFC 2010.
All right.
They've stabilised the club. They've held on to people like Darren Ambrose and Nathaniel Klein, who are really important for them. They face Leicester, who are one of the pre-season favourites for promotion. And what are you doing, Jimbo?
Jimbo's making a batting and bowling.
Yeah. Wasn't he a cricketer?
Who?
Darrell Ambrose.
You're thinking of Curt the Ambrose?
Ah,
the 6-for-8 West Indian fast bowler from the 90s.
Is this his brother or something?
I don't think they could look less like half to be honest. Brother.
Push. Yeah, but I don't. I think Palace will be fine this season. I don't think they'll go down, but I don't think they'll make the playoffs.
What about QPR?
QPR are interesting. They battered Barnsley last weekend 4-0, which sort of stoked expectations. I didn't think that Neil Warnock's summer spending was particularly inspired. People like Leon Clark and Sean Derry, then they've been around for a while and never really done anything. The best signing he made was probably Paddy Kenny from Sheffield United, who was out last season, you remember, with a drugs ban for 12 months. And then Sheffield United had terrible defensive problems last season, and Paddy Kenny came back for the last two games of the season where we kept two clean sheets, and it wasn't a coincidence. He does make a big difference.
What age is he now?
He must be 31, 32.
Oh, I thought he was older than that.
No, he's not. Well, I don't know for sure. So yeah, QPR will be there or thereabouts. They've signed Adel Trapt Spurs,
who was with them anyway before.
Who was on loan?
Yeah.
Scored one of the goals of the season last season. People should have a look for it on YouTube. I can't remember who was it against, but fantastic, where he chests it down on the halfway line, swerves past three defenders, and pings one in the top corner. And he's one of those players that is far too good for the Championship on his day, but his days come few and far between. Yeah, they'll be in the mix with Middlesbrough, Burnley. That type of team.
What about Pompey?
Well, they don't have any players. That's their issue. They're right. Down to a squad of about, I think it's 13 at the last count.
You're joking.
Of proper, you know, old enough to play properly players. They had to fill the bench at the weekend when they lost to Coventry with youth
that
teams.
That man with the bell.
Yeah, a couple of workers from the local docks.
And Observer Sport editor Brian Oliver.
Yeah, I think they will struggle because they've got this transfer embargo that at the moment there's no sign of being lifted, so they can't bring anybody else in, and they can't register any more players, so they're not going to be able to fill that bench.
Well, just one of the lads on our sort of rival, for want of a better word, podcast, the Football Ramble, is a big Portsmouth fan. I'd say he's very excited about possibly getting a game for his team this season because I think he's quite good at football.
The strange thing is that if you look at the first 11 that they put out at the weekend, you know, I think that's, you know, they had David Nugent and John Utaka, and some players who have cost an awful lot of money over the years. But that's literally it. That's those 11 or 12 players, and there's nothing else.
Wow. A couple of tweets here. JLQPR says, who does John think are favourites for this year?
Well, I tipped Burnley before the weekend, right. And they did get off to a winning start against Nottingham Forest, who a lot of other people were tipping.
Okay.
The problem with Burnley is, of course, Brian Laws, who people certainly don't rate as a manager. He had a nightmare time with him in the Premier League. But he did an okay job at Sheffield Wednesday when he had them in the Championship. No better than okay. But he didn't make a complete hash of it. And I think he's probably good enough to get that team sorted. They've brought in Ross Wallace from Preston, who's an excellent player. Chris Iwolumo troubles defences at this level. Lee Grant's one of the best keepers outside the Premier League.
One final thing. Oh, yeah. Dowser 8 says, please mention the Exeter City striker Adam Stansfield's terrible loss at such a young age. Should have been a minute's silence for it. maybe for his death.
Well, the England game.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite possibly. They've cancelled the match this weekend against Dagenham. It's been postponed. And we also ought to mention that the MK Dons Southampton game has been postponed because of Marcus Lieber, the Southampton owner.
Mm, indeed. Well, that's the Championship then. Still to come, we talk to Sid. We hope he's at Ricardo Carvalho's unveiling amid scenes of kind of 20-minute keepy uppies to the strains of Live is Life and all that at the Bernabeu.
Weren't Opus Opus an Austrian band?
Who?
Weren't they?
I think they probably were. Don't get me started on top Slovak or possibly Slovenian post-political constructuralist, etc. Experiment lie back.
But that came out in 1985.
What
it?
Did?
Life is Life.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Good. All right then. Anyway, all that and international chat still to come. Hello, Sid Lowe.
Hello, James. How are you?
Hi, Sid, and welcome back.
Welcome back to you too.
Thank you. Now, you're at Ricardo Carvalho's unveiling, and I bet it's a spectacular affair.
It was actually relatively downplayed. I've just come out of it. He didn't do the obligatory kicky uppies on the pitch, so I suppose they're no longer obligatory.
I mean, it's Ricardo Carvalho.
There was quite a crowd of people outside the stadium who I assume were waiting to go in and see him, but he has done the normal press conference thing, and he came across quite well. He said a couple of relatively interesting things. Amongst them, he revealed the fact that last year when he wanted to go to Inter Milan to play with Jose Mourinho, who of course he's now going to play with at the third club, having been at Porto and Chelsea with him, Chelsea said no, wouldn't let him. But he basically insisted then, OK, then when I'm going next year. So last season, he played last season at Chelsea, and it appears that Chelsea knew that.
Mm, interesting. Apart from Carvalho, am I right in saying there hasn't been a huge amount of signing going on in Spain?
No, there's been hardly any. Basically, I think the phrase is pot and pissing, and no one's got one right now. Apart from Barcelona, of course, spent $40 million on David Villa, and now it looks very sensible that they did so before the World Cup. Probably his fee would have got higher during the World Cup. No one's really put huge money behind any players. There's been one or two interesting signings, but you look at Real Madrid, and the player who's probably got people more excited than anyone else is actually Sergio Canales, who of course was bought midway through last season for €10 million, but didn't join them until this summer. Everybody thought he would go out on loan, but the injury to Kaká, who's going to be out for at least 3 months, suggests that we might actually see Sergio Canales play rather a lot, although it is true that Real Madrid is still chasing a striker, so that would kind of get in his way if that was the case.
All right, interesting. A couple of weeks still before the Spanish season gets underway, so plenty can change, of course, on the transfer front. Two stories I wanted to ask you about. Mascherano, who has very much announced that he's off from Liverpool, but are Barcelona no longer in a position to buy him, from what you're saying?
Well, it's very interesting this, because you listen to the quotes from Mascherano's agents, and I think they're quotes that sound really quite desperate in many ways. He keeps saying, yeah, he'd love to go to Barcelona, and yes, it would be easy, and don't worry, it'd be nowhere near as hard as Cesc, and he wouldn't be that expensive. And it seems like a man who's trying to protest a bit too much to me. Barcelona certainly don't have the money to splash a lot on Mascherano, but they would like another player, or maybe even two before the end of the window, or at least that's what the directors would like. Pep Guardiola isn't quite so clear. There isn't a huge amount of cash, but Mascherano's agent is insisting that he'll cost about half as much as what they're asking for Cesc Fabregas. So we're talking maybe €20 million, roughly £23-24 million. But I think that actually there's a good chance of it not happening, as I say, because A, the club hasn't got the money, as Jura say, the new president has insisted time and time again, and B, because Pep Guardiola is not that keen, because Guardiola is very, very insistent on one thing above all else, and that is, let's not cut the progression down of the kids who are coming through.
Right. Okay, so the replacement for Yaya Toure would come from within.
Well, it's going to be Sergio Busquets. Essentially, this is what happened last year. And I'll be honest with you, throughout last year, I thought Yaya Toure was a better player than Busquets. So I couldn't really understand why they let him go. I thought it was a very strange decision. But there's a number of factors there. One of them is, of course, the fact that Sergio Busquets then went and had a very, very good World Cup indeed. And I think proved a lot of people wrong, including... and also the fact that Yaya Toure, Real Madrid, believe that he's slightly problematic, that it takes him a while to get fit. When he's not fit, he's no good at all, and he's basically got an agent who is, I think as Viz described it, an acute bodily smart in the rectal area.
Mm. Plus they got $28 million for him.
They did get good money for him. I mean, I think that's also a key factor. And bear in mind, there has been a certain degree of housekeeping going on at Barcelona this summer, and an attempt to try and balance the fact that they spent an awful lot of money last year, and they spent a hell of a lot of money this year as well, David Villa.
What about Chelsea's stupid money offer for Sergio Aguero that we were all awaiting?
It's strange, isn't it? Because we are all awaiting it, and I must confess, I thought it would happen. So far, one of the most interesting things about Atletico Madrid hasn't been the players they've bought, or they've bought one or two reasonably interesting players, not least Godin and Mario Suarez, and Fran Merida, of course, from Arsenal. But the fact that they've kept their key players, I think we're all still quite surprised that Agüero's still there, Forlan, even Reyes to some extent, and Simao. I must admit, I expected a huge bid for Sergio Agüero at some stage. I honestly don't know where it is. I'm waiting for it to turn up.
Oh. All right then, Sid. Sorry, Barry, you were about to say.
Well, Sid, I was just thinking if Ireland were to win the World Cup, the whole country would shut down for at least a month while everyone went on the drink. What's it been like in Spain?
I must admit, I've been really, really surprised by this. And I've been talking to Spanish mates today at the Carvalho press conference and saying, I don't understand what's wrong with them. Now, admittedly, it's true that I went on holiday virtually immediately after the World Cup, but I kept on reading the Spanish papers and so on. And I was really struck by how quickly Barcelona and Real Madrid returned to the front covers of the Spanish papers, how quickly the club agenda became the key agenda. And I was thinking, you know, we've been wallowing in it since 1966, at least wallowing in it for a month. And I've been surprised by that. Now, of course, it's true there's been excitement. Of course, it's true that everybody's very pleased with themselves. And yesterday, Spain played their first game, of course, since the World Cup, a 1-1 draw with Mexico. And everyone was very excited because this is the champions. We're going to play our first game with a star on the shirt and all this sort of stuff. But I've been really struck by how quickly the club agenda took over. And maybe that's been best reflected in this friendly with Mexico, because basically the overriding, the overriding emotions around this big game has been everyone's been a little bit annoyed, particularly Barcelona, because they played the Spanish Super Cup at the weekend and they were furious at Spain. How dare Spain take their Spanish players with them?
Yeah. All right then. Sid, listen, that's been brilliant. A couple of weeks, as I say, until the season gets started. We'll catch up with you then soon.
Yep, fantastic. Speak to you then.
Thank you very much, Sid. Well, just to wrap up then listeners. Spain, as Sid was mentioning, were in action this midweek, 1-1, one of an assortment of midweek internationals. You had your South Africa 1, Ghana 0, you had your Denmark 2, Germany 2, Argentina beating Ireland, of course, that fellow Di Maria, that Real Madrid signing. What else? You have Italy losing against Ivory Coast, Brazil beating America 2-0, and England, away they go with a 2-1 victory. World Cup Blues behind them, John Ashdown.
Absolutely. I think
new spring in the step, eh?
They're nailed on for 2014 now, I think, absolutely. No, right. It was... I only sort of half.
You're joking, but producer Pete, who is a big England fan, was speaking this morning with a little glint in his eye about the youngsters with the spring in their step and a new wind blowing through them.
Oh, dear.
I would have liked to have seen more youngsters. I think it was. I think.
All right, producer Pete's now saying he's not a big England fan. He's a big Charlton fan. Doesn't care about England. Okay.
But yeah, I would have liked to have seen a few more of the younger players and people like Wiltshire given a little bit longer than 8 minutes.
Right.
It just seems that every time that you think, not even that there was no sense of turning the corner. It was, it was an entirely sort of flat sort of continuation. If you ask me, and then Capello goes afterwards and sort of does the whole Beckham thing, which just sort of seems like a very shambolic way.
Yeah,
of
dropping that bombshell that 36-year-old man with ruptured Achilles tendon may not be playing in 2012.
It was astonishing.
Right. Sean Ingle wanted to talk about this, but he's gone boxing now, so we don't have to.
Think it should be addressed. Apparently, it came as a huge surprise to Beckham. I have my doubts because I think if his people had handled it themselves and organised it themselves, they couldn't have organised it better. He's on all the front pages where he loves being. All the talk on phone-ins is about him. He's in the news. And he's going to get a friendly appearance now, so the FA will get a full house at Wembley for another meaningless friendly, so people can pay their respects to this great hero of the nation. And, it just all smacks of a big PR job to me.
Speaking of full houses...
Oh, by the way, I don't think Beckham will ever play football again, apart from in a friendly, international friendly. It sounds like the kind of... He's been made look a martyr today, and that suits him great. And now he can have his international friendly to retire and then announce his retirement from football and get on with saving the world.
Excellent.
Do you want a quick quiz question about Beckham?
Please.
He made his debut in 1996 against Moldova in Chisinau. And one other player made his debut in that game. Can you name him?
Gary Neville.
No.
Ricketts.
Beckham played on the right of midfield. This player played on the left.
Oh, it's going to be... there's no way I'm going to know.
Andy Hinchcliffe.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. speaking of big crowds at Wembley, though, 70,000. Plus.
It's astonishing.
Yeah. And also they got that new semi-synthetic pitch, which did that work out better for them?
It seems to be better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to be okay. As our resident pitch gardening
right, okay,
expert.
Good. And while we're, you know, just on the subject of England and Capella and all that, more perhaps than in Wednesday's game, I thought it was intriguing what happened after the Charity Shield. Was that just a big kind of puffed up media story, that? Or do you think there's something in the way that Ashley Cole walked past Fabio Capello without so much as a glance when he went to collect his runners-up medal in the Charity Shield or shake hands or whatever, and Carrick, I don't know. There
I
was
would imagine all the players don't
Carrick
like
thing.
Him and right. think he's a joker. And
but they used to respect
probably
him.
Have a point because he's arguably the worst manager England have ever had.
Who, Fabio Capello?
In my lifetime, anyway, yeah.
You think Fabio Capello is the worst manager that England have ever had in your lifetime?
Without doubt, yes. He's a joke. The World Cup was a disaster. He's since admitted he doesn't know what to do next, and he refuses to answer any questions about what went wrong. He was asked, what mistakes did you make in the World Cup? And he said, everyone made mistakes. That wasn't the question he was
right.
asked.
No, he's not very media-friendly, I grant you
his
that.
His English isn't good enough, and I think he hides behind that to cover his many, many shortcomings.
I think he definitely uses his lack of English as a very...
And I also
weapon.
Think if he was a Geordie or a Mackham or from Bristol and had a funny English accent, he'd have been sacked.
But you cannot forget the way he got England playing during the qualifiers. The fact that he failed to do that in the tournament, it does as the Italians would say, redimension. I changed the way we think of his managerial stature. But he did have an enormous impact. He's clearly a good manager, just not as good as England at home.
We said in this pod before the World Cup that England would be hopeless. Now, if we can tell that...
Yeah, well, maybe he could too.
I'm not on £6 million a year. It was right. pretty obvious to me what would go wrong and how it would
go. If we thought they were
going to
be hopeless, and they were hopeless, that doesn't mean that it's Capello's fault, does it? It just means that it's a hopeless
Well, he
squad.
Has to shoulder some of the blame, surely.
I agree, he
not
does.
Not all of the blame.
I'm not denying
I would
he had
also
a bad
argue
tournament.
That a lot of that squad is unmanageable.
Right.
Such is their
Again,
egomania.
That means that it's not an indictment of his managerial ability, although I think it does come out of it severely battered. But you cannot possibly say he is the worst manager that England have had in the last, however old you are, Barry.
37.
Right, there you go. Because
who's worse?
Well, Steve McLaren, for a start.
Nah.
Capello actually qualified us. Kevin Keegan would be another option.
Nah, I wouldn't agree.
How about that Graham Taylor fellow?
I think Graham Taylor did quite well with them.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
No, Capello's a disaster. He's a... absolute joke as an international manager.
I think differently. Listeners, if you have a view on this, and I can't think how you would, do send in your thoughts with a stamped address envelope to guardian.co.uk/footballweekly. But that pretty much wraps it up for today, methinks. And a long old pod it has been. Hopefully it's kept you entertained in places. Many thanks to John Ashdown.
No problem.
To Barry Glendenning.
You're welcome. Thanks.
And to Sean Ingle, who can't say you're welcome, well, thank you.
He's off.
Because he's gone off boxing.
He's probably punching my
punching
other half in
John
the face
Ash,
at the
his girlfriend.
Well, that's not how it works, though, is it, John? Because he has to hold his arms up while she batters him in the ribs. Is that right?
I think they do a little bit of, you know, they mix it up a little bit more these days.
Really?
They're all a bit more
So he might be punching your girlfriend, who also, listeners, does this boxing training. Mm. Should you not also be present? If anybody needs boxing training at this point, is it not you, I put it to you?
What to do? In what way?
Well, just so that, you know, you come into the deal on an even basis, you know?
No.
Level playing field. And
no, one of, you know, she can look after me, it's fine.
That's true. That's a lovely way to think of it. Very good. We'll be back then on Monday morning with the first Football Weekly of the season, looking back on this exciting, exciting first round of Premier League fixtures and much more besides. So hopefully you'll join us there. Thanks to producer Pete and you, the listener. See you after the weekend.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.